data is an essential piece of our lives. With our topic, which is this legal touch to add, very little companies and people understand the whole value of it. And what we want to present is a clear opposite to the terms which people usually associate with data privacy or compliance. It is a cliche, but content is king.
Welcome to Speak Like a CEO. My name is Oliver Aust, and it is my job here to talk to leading CEOs and founders about communications and find out how they build their companies, how they become great leaders, and how they communicate with internal, external, and financial audiences. And my guest today, and I'm looking forward to this conversation, I'll tell you in a second why. My guest today is Miloš Djordjević. He's the co-CEO and co-founder of Hey Data, a venture-backed startup focusing on compliance as a service. What I want to understand better is how they make such a dry and, to be honest, boring topic interesting. Because I think there's a lot in it for all of us. Because let's face it, most products and most reasons to communicate are not that fascinating in and out of itself. We have to work to make them interesting. So that's what I'm here to find out. Hi, Miloš.
Hello, Oliver. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, and thank you. Shout out to Daniel Hahnemann, who has connected us. So, first question, very obviously, is why compliance as a service? You as a founder could do so many things, other topics, maybe more interesting, more sexy, but you chose compliance as a service. Why?
I think it is a combination of the experience which I and my co-founders gained in the last few years, and also the trending topics which you can see in the market. But ultimately, it boils down to that data becomes an essential piece of our whole environment. And we understood, based on our experience, that very little companies and people understand the whole value of it. And we thought by educating the people and the companies and bringing that to the present, that they really get an understanding what's going on there and why it is necessary, we not only do good, but we also help them inside of the business to understand it and integrate it there.
Yeah. Could you give us an example and describe a little what Hey Data actually does? What kind of service do I get if I become a customer?
Yeah, so our core business and what we started with is actually the whole topic of data privacy. So, I mean, I guess, especially in Germany, everyone heard about data privacy and the terms around that. But it kind of got a huge bump in 2018 when GDPR was introduced. And we realized
General Data Protection Regulation.
Exactly, the whole GDPR topic. Yeah. And what we understand back then, that especially the SMB industry is not really aware, what is it? And especially, how can I comply with it? And why do I need to do that? And what we develop with our software solution is a highly automated process where we guide companies of different sizes and different industries completely through a process which is much shorter than you would do it by yourself or, let's say, by a law firm. And then you can monitor everything through a platform, the documentation which was created, the education and training of your employees, the document management with third-party solution, and so on and so on. And based on that, we kind of continued by creating further relevant features to, again, simplify the process and make it more doable for the organizations to comply with the system, which, also important to know, is dynamically changing. So compared to some other regulation which are kind of set in stone, the whole topic of privacy or GDPR and all this kind of different certifications and so on, which were born out of this, are changing continuously, and it's very difficult for the organizations and individual stakeholders who are managing it to really follow up with that. And this is also what we support by the software.
So I guess if I do it myself, you know, I get something wrong, and then there may be problems down the line because I'm not complying with the regulation. If I hire a law firm, it's probably very expensive, and they don't take care of the, you know, the custom integration, the technical integration. I still have to do it, and you're simplifying this whole process, and I guess also cheaper than a law firm, right? Is that fair summary?
Yeah.
Perfect. I got it. Now I understand. Perfect. So what brings you to this business? What's your personal backstory?
Yeah. Let's start kind of very early on. So I grew up in a small town, actually, in Germany, where my initial idea was to follow the track of becoming a medical doctor. My parents are dentists, but I kind of didn't want to be tied to a chair. Therefore, I thought that medicine would serve my wish for freedom. But like after 1.5 years, I kind of understood that this is not really the way I want to follow. And I would say I followed the typical German startup trip because I went to a renowned business school near Cologne where I did my bachelor's degree and yeah, you guessed very, very right here. And did some stints in startups and venture capital to get a better understanding how this whole ecosystem and industry works of this new builded companies. And after that, ultimately I went to Rocket Internet to gain my first experiences. And although there are mixed feelings about the company and the real outcome of it, I don't want to miss the contact which I made and the things I learned during that time. But after about nearly 2 years there, I kind of got the understanding that I really do not want to work in this kind of fast online e-commerce or, you know, delivery topics, which Rocket served highly back then, and would like to intertwine my different interests, and went to work for a digital health insurance, which is called Autonova. I was the fifth person there. And these were kind of the initial touch points where I got to understand what regulation has an impact, because there we tried to get the BaFin license, a huge process, like it takes forever, especially as a health insurer, but very interesting to see. And this was kind of the step where I went deeper and deeper in these kind of topics. So I did a master's in medtech then in the UK, which also again opened up my view on medtech and pharmaceutical concepts and how they work and what regulation they need to follow. And that led me finally also to a stint into VC, where I specifically looked at medtech business models. And that was kind of the real turning point for me, when I understood if some businesses do not comply with the regulatory framework, they actually can't work at all. Like if they don't get the license, they don't get the certificate, it doesn't matter how good the idea is, they will never reach the market. And so then I kind of started looking into that. I was in Munich then, working for a telemedicine business from Canada, moving to the German market. And we did this process like of GDPR with a very large renowned law firm, and the same, let's say, name and heaviness of the brand, the same gut also for the receipt and the bill which we got from that company.
Can imagine.
And I mean, I don't want to tell numbers, but I mean, it was larger than some management salaries you would usually pay in the startup scene.
So clearly six-figure salary, yes, to give some legal advice on a law which everyone can read. It's 200 pages, but still.
Yeah, exactly. And the point was then, where I was back then also sitting with Daniel, one of my co-founders, and we were discussing the topic and asking ourselves, like, how do SMB companies do that? I mean, we can do that because we work for very well venture-backed businesses, and we have the collaborations also with many law firms. We kind of know our way out. But I mean, just looking at the German market, there are more than 3 million SMB companies.
So small and medium-sized businesses,
and they need to comply with that. And we were like, oh my God, let's start some conversations and see what's going on there. And I mean, due to the WHU connection, there are quite many of these small and medium-sized businesses, let's say more in a digital perspective, but still they have the size of 20 to 50 employees. You know, they work internationally, they run websites, digital products. And after 5-6 conversations, we realized there's complete unclearness what needs to be done. They tried to do it, never got it really solved. And there is kind of a level of anxiety for every founder or managing director, because if you don't comply with it, that can also have personal liabilities in it. It depends like how large the breach is. And then we understood this is a real pain point. And back to the topic that we all gained quite some experience in the startup world, we said to ourselves, we really want to start a business when we have the feeling that there is a pain which we can solve with our approach, and not just be like vitamin B, you know, supporting some nice add-on, but not a real painkiller. And here we had the feeling that we can create and build a painkiller for this compliance topic for the SMB segment. And this is how kind of we got to the whole topic.
But what's your view on the GDPR regulations, or general data protection regulation from the EU? Because a lot of people criticize it, other people see it as could potentially be an opportunity, and you obviously for you it's an opportunity. But you know, if you as a human being look at this, yeah, okay, is this the right thing to do?
I personally think that it really is the right thing to do. And I see that comparison, especially if you look in the US, where this kind of regulation is not standardized and that kind of every state has their very own system behind it. And we also saw some examples in Asia, because collaborate with the German accelerator on some companies which maybe want to move to the European market, and their lack of understanding of that, and also in some very sensitive topics like healthcare, insurance, finance, and so on, that these kind of data which is collected and, you know, somewhere stored, that there it is possible to do whatever you kind of want. But Europe made this restriction, and I understand the point when people and companies say the restrictions are too high. And maybe that is sometimes the problem, like how do you read the law? But that we have a standard where at least most people try to follow is, I think, very essential for the times to come. Because as I said in the beginning, like, data is kind of an essential piece of our lives. And now looking at this boom with OpenAI now, where they got like 1 million users in less than 2 days, that will show that people will more and more use their data for different reasons, fully automated with the software in the background. And if no one knows where it's stored and what's going to happen ultimately with it, there is also lots of risk which can be created by it.
Yeah, interesting. So I would agree that a high level of data protection is good for us as consumers, as internet users, and so on. I think a 200-page document, it is pretty obvious that big companies with big legal departments, they will just figure it out, right? But yeah, us, the smaller companies, we have to work way harder. But again, that's where you come in. So how do you convince customers, or how do you win customers? So what messaging works for you?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because over time what we realized there, ultimately different reasons why people start to work with us and are looking for that kind of solution. Let's try to put it into a few main columns. I would say they're customers which just see the risk and they want to minimize their risk. They see it as a problem which they want to solve, just to not be liable for any kind of topic in that sense. Then there is another group which works, let's say, in a more delicate business, works with lots of sensitive data. They want to use it as a sales argument, because their clients and partners are specifically looking into that if they cover that topic, and they need the kind of certification, they need the logo that they're properly covered. And the third group, I would say they're kind of in between. They see it as an obligation, the same way as they would, do occupational health, for instance, for their employees. They see it as a ticking box when they start the business, and they just want to get it done as early as possible so that the costs don't explode down the road. And for these three groups, we actually created different communication systems through a multi-channel strategy. So some of our channels, just to give you an example, like LinkedIn, is clearly for awareness, for educating people, for showing kind of expertise, because for any kind of these three groups, it is relevant. And then depending on the urgency of the topic, either our paid marketing strategies kicks in, so that our SEA and the Bing involvement, you know, kicks in when you're specifically looking for a GDPR solution. Or if you're at an earlier stage, you want to educate yourself, we provide lots of studies, we provide white papers, even webinars, you know, to show how people can try to solve it themselves and where usually a partner is needed. Because what we understood, pushing customers to buy our solution is not the right way, but showing them that we are the right partner at the specific point in time and for specific actions they want to take in the future, this is how we position ourselves.
So what you're saying is you're selling by not actually selling.
Kind of. At least maybe to say, at least until we get to the lead. When the lead is in our system, we specifically explain them the software. We show them how they can decrease the invested time, which they usually did before, and can also show them by our very transparent pricing model that instead of becoming a blurry number they need to pay on a quarterly basis and they never know how much it's going to be, with us they have the stability to exactly know what's going to be the yearly or monthly pricing to it, to get everything covered.
Yeah. Interesting. And you mentioned that some customers basically looking for compliance box to tick. Others see this even as a competitive advantage. But how do you segment these and tailor your messaging? How do you know who is who?
We have kind of different campaigns in that sense running. Some general ones, which are just to create awareness and to, you know, show us as a company being there in the market for that topics. And then we have more kind of boiled down campaigns, especially for LinkedIn, where we really look into the companies, what they're doing and which industries do they act, where we do like more kind of direct telling them the benefits, what they can get out of us. Because what you need to understand and what we also explain like to our customers, we are not a solution which is, as I said, a nice to have, which you maybe can generate cheaper leads or you can always sell easier. But when you need it, you want it done properly. And we see that also with some, in the end, like some stores which are in the B2C market around, like, let's say, some kind of shops which are selling specific tools, you know, to build a house or something like that. You don't go there all the time, but you specifically know if I need something like that, I will go there because they can help me. And this is how we see ourselves. So there's the generic campaigns to create a general awareness about us and what we're doing. And then we kind of group the, let's say, the companies which have a larger benefit out of us, which we contact them directly or do very specified campaigns for them.
I would imagine that there have been lots of learnings, right, running these different campaigns, let's say the multi-channel approach targeting different audiences. So what did you learn over the last year or so?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like the last 2 years weren't the most normal ones, I would say, if you look at the total market. So once we had Corona, this year we have several factors from inflation, recession, war in Europe and these kind of things. So people have different topics on top of their mind. But what we specifically learned is that, I mean, it is a cliche, but content is king. In the end, pushing yourself to the well-known paid channels is a way in the beginning, but it isn't a long-term strategy. And therefore, we understood that we really need to stand out with, you know, very own created content, and not only in the way of blogs. Actually, the best thing what we saw is working are the studies, because we create studies on our own, which we use for PR reasons. So we literally go to different newspapers, magazines, very large blogs and so on to present the topics which we created, which they from time to time then share with others, maybe in a concise way, but, you know, with a reference to us. And we also use these studies for our own kind of marketing when the leads come in to really show the expertise. And this is something which stays, I would say, because we pick the topics that are not like trending over the last few weeks, but I have a more general feel. For example, for that, we did a study. The last study we did this year was one about evaluating the kind of traffic what social media platforms get. It is not a typical B2B topic, but everyone uses the social media platforms, and they know, everyone kind of knows that they earn quite some cash ultimately year by year. And the question is, how do they do it? And then we looked at the average revenue per user, the average screen time, and did some calculations to understand how is Meta working on a yearly basis. When do they start earning money? And it is very interesting to see that, for instance, Facebook is earning even 1 cent like after 1 minute. But for instance, YouTube as a platform takes up to 5 minutes until they really start earning money. And that amount on average comes up to between, let's say, 200 euro on the upper end for Meta as an example, and can go down to 30 euro for YouTube on a yearly basis. And then this kind of understanding that data is directly related to money and value. This is something what people really love to understand. And yeah, that's what we produced and show who we are.
It's super interesting. I can imagine that there's quite a bit of PR pickup around that. And someone recently said, I can't remember who it is, you know, it's often held that we as users of social media platforms are the product. And that person said, no, actually, not even that. We're just the fuel, right? We're just thrown into the fire to keep the, you know, to keep the fire burning. Exactly. Makes a lot of sense. And I think it's a great way to highlight what you have to offer. Now, thinking about it from an employer branding perspective, so you obviously need to hire really good people to implement and execute your strategy. How do you do that? Because obviously you're competing with other companies and products that may seem more interesting at first sight, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. You're completely correct with the point that we really, really need top people. And with our topic, which has this kind of legal touch to add, and it is something people are not fully aware in the everyday life. Also, our onboarding takes quite a while so that people really understand it. And I mean, the same way we're doing our marketing to end customers, the same way we do it ultimately also for the people we want to hire, because we try to present ourselves in the different platforms. I mean, LinkedIn is not only for customers, but it's also to find the right people which should work for us. And what we want to present is a clear opposite to the terms which people usually associate with, let's say, data privacy or compliance. I mean, these, let's say, older or brick and mortar businesses in that industry are very corporate, very serious, have even some kind of boring touch. And we try to show that in our own social media channels, which we serve, that we are a fun, young, very international, dynamic company. You know, we have a completely hybrid model in place, so that we have even head of positions spread around Europe. Everyone can join us and then be able to, you know, fulfill their personal career dreams here. We try to educate them further on. We have budgets, you know, to serve them so that they can educate themselves into one or the other direction, and try to bring also the whole group from time to time together. I mean, just as an example, after our financing round, because that was quite a big step for us and lots of work. I mean, you know how the market was in the last few months. Then we actually ask the people, what would you like to do as a group that we can engage in? And we said maybe the best idea is to do a small trip. And then we did different opportunities where we could go as a group. And in the end, the group decided we should go to Marrakesh. So we took the whole company. We went there for a few days, did some workshops. Nice. Where we created our values together with all employees. So everyone feels, you know, honored to be part of that group and to have this real saying. And there we really don't compare if you're a director level or just a working student or intern. Everyone should kind of bring their piece to the organization, as long as we are in that kind of, let's say, manageable size, because we all know that this will also change a little bit over time as we are still continuous with our growth.
Yeah. You mentioned the fundraising. You started out bootstrapping at first, then you became a VC case. I think last summer you did your seed round quite successfully. So can you talk us through that shift from bootstrapping to becoming a VC investment vehicle?
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually a question many also acquaintances and friends asked, as we did the bootstrapping week for quite a while. And the reason for it is actually some of the experience I mentioned before in my career. I worked in very well-funded businesses, and then I have lots of contacts in that industry. But I also saw how growth at one point can explode. It always kind of comes the picture to me how Icarus and Daedalus are flying too high, too close to the sun, and then, you know, they crash significantly. And I said, if I start my own business at one point or the other, I really do not want to get into the situation, because usually you're not alone in this, but you have a ship of people which follow you on the downwards round. And this is something I would love to try not to happen. So we started with this bootstrap way, where we really wanted to understand the pain points and build an initial MVP product with customers. So we said we're starting the business only if we have signed contracts, and we had that in the beginning. And so we also started the business aside of our kind of main careers, like working at nights and on weekend to get like to this first point. And only at the moment when we saw that the growth is picking up and that people and in the end companies are starting to referring us to others, this is the point when we started to discuss with our initial angel saying, hey, we think we kind of found a real nice MVP for this SMB market. Let's discuss it through. And when they provided their yeses and they were all experienced founders, either worked for many years in VC or grew companies to several hundred millions of size, then we said, okay, let's take the switch step by step to become a VC funded business. And then actually one step came after the other, saying we wanted to fuel our growth. We saw that the demand from the customers are getting more and more complex by features. We wanted still that the product is very smooth and easy to use. Therefore, we needed to increase also our tech capacities. And, you know, at that point, we just needed then to take the money, still having our growth and, retention and everything always with a close look on that, which gives us now much more stability than maybe many other companies are having in the market.
Yeah. And I can imagine having product market fit and presumably also message market fit and some revenue and customers obviously helps with the fundraising as well.
Yes.
Because, you know, just a pitch deck, you have a proper business up and running.
Exactly. That's also why our seed round was, I would say, quite different to some other cases which I saw. And this is also what helped us to get initially a US VC on board, because they saw that we are not only able, you know, to sell a company on a pitch deck, but to create a real business. And the topic which we're tackling is not a local, but rather a global one. And then let's see how far we can bring it. And this is where we felt super honored, actually, end of the summer.
And does that mean that you have set your sights on international expansion?
Yes. That's very true. This is actually one of the steps we're going to take with the fundraise we did in last summer. So now, as we kind of created our core product, we're now expanding into some smaller other products to provide a more complete compliance solution. And at the same time, as we saw that we already are able to gain customers from abroad, because we have customers from UK, Poland, Spain, even US already, just through inbound and referral, we want to use that good signaling from the market to see in one or two markets in the upcoming year, where we really want to create a footprint, also to show that we can naturally and healthy expand to other markets.
Yeah, including the US, because you mentioned the US investor.
The US is something which we have in mind, but honestly, most probably not in next year, because if we take that step, that is connected with a much larger investment. And the same way as we did it with our product, because we think of our product as creating blueprints in the compliance space and then rolling it out to other topic, the same way we are looking into international expansion, kind of creating a blueprint how we enter new markets and then expand it like to the larger ones. And US is, I mean, understandable, mm-hmm. one of the largest markets where we could expand to.
Yeah, but you said first get the product right, roll it out, cover more of what's required, yeah. and then roll it out rather than rolling it out geographically and then continue to work on the product. Yeah,
exactly.
I can see that. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I also wanted to ask you about the brand Hey Data, which I think is pretty brilliant. So how did that come about?
We were actually discussing the topic of branding this summer together with the funding round, because we thought, is it really understandable in all the other markets? Should we maybe also use the opportunity to change the name? And yeah, in the end we said, no, let's stick to it. It kind of works. People have a good emotional feeling when hearing it. And if I think back how we come up with the name, that was still in Munich. We were like sitting together discussing it around, and we thought, okay, we do something with data protection, so that should be for sure a part, but it should have this feeling of easiness, seamless, you know. You just kind of ask a friend instead of you know, I'm going to a corporate partner and I know I need to pay a huge bill in the end. And then this kind of hey trend also appeared a little bit. And we said, okay, why not come by? Hey, beta sounds good to us. Probably it sounds good to others. We tested it a little bit with friends and family. They all liked it. And yeah, this is how we made this kind of heavy decision very easy on. But we're very happy with it.
Yeah, I like it. It's interesting for exactly the same reasons you just mentioned. So your plan is working, as far as I'm concerned, at least, because it does what it says on the tin, but at the same time, there's a lighthearted feel to it. And yeah, maybe there should be a law firm, not surname, but hey, law or something, hey, legal. Maybe that would make it a bit lighten Absolutely. Things up a little bit on their side. But yeah, hey, data is really cool. I like it. And I would assume it works in all sorts of markets and is relatively easy to explain. Yeah,
absolutely. That's why also this international companies got also quite quickly what we are doing, and then we could already jump to, you know, the product topics and so on, instead of, you know, explaining where the name comes from or this kind of very, let's call them very creative names also in the Rocket era, which were built up. You know, we wanted to move away a little bit of that.
These artificial names, I think that sounds a bit dated these days, I think. The good thing is, I think you elicit exactly the emotions you want to elicit with your brand name. So if the brand name works, a lot of the messaging work, what's the biggest obstacle? What's the bottleneck to winning more customers and growing quicker?
I think right now, as we grew to, I mean, several hundreds of clients already in all these different markets, the biggest bottleneck is to get more of this idea of how can compliance actually enable new growth for these businesses, because most of them still see it as a must have, I need to do it, and so on and so on. Only a few are starting now saying, okay, my partners would like to see that, or my end customers are quite aware of that topic and they want to feel in safe hands, kind of. And bringing this over to the organizations in a market which is now, let's say, very cost aware and tries to be cost efficient, that is kind of a more difficult thing to do. But it is something where we want to double down, because we see that in the future, being compliant and following rules, doesn't matter if they're like state pushed or just, you know, very own ones like a code of conduct or something like that, that will make a decision if a business can be in a long term successful or not. And therefore, this is how we want to, you know, construct our future communication more into that direction.
Yeah, that makes sense. And for you personally, as a CEO and as the chief communicator of the business, what's the next step in your personal development when it comes to communications?
Yeah, so for me personally, it is becoming more and more important to be able to talk about the vision which we want to establish, because now as we establish the product and the product is running and people are happy with it, the question appears, where do we heading? And getting that over in discussions like these, you know, that we want to create a global compliance solution for the SMB, industry agnostic and so on, with its very own storytelling. This is something, where I'm heavily working on. Also, I mean, looking into the investor market and, you know, getting that story, towards them, is one of the biggest tasks which I'm having here.
Amazing. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And my final question is always a kind of a natural follow-up to what I just asked you. What's your most valuable communications advice for anyone out there listening?
I think the most valuable communication advice is when you start to create a narrative, rather invest an hour more than an hour less, because once it's out, it's really, really difficult to change. And the connected piece to it, if you understand what your narrative is going to be, then think about the initial channels you want to use. Because the issue what we also understood after the years which we're running in the business is, if you try to serve all channels, you won't get the story towards the listeners. You really need to think about who's on the other side, and is this story really fitting their kind of needs or demand.
I like that. I like that a lot, I have to say. Milos. Thank you so much. That was an incredible conversation. I learned a lot and I take a lot away from this because I always, you know, as a communicator often gets asked, well, my business is, you know, maybe not the most interesting by itself. How can I get the story across? It's super interesting to hear about your experience and how you are now developing the vision on top of the product. And I think that's a great journey and thank you for sharing it.
Yeah. Thank you for being in this very interesting conversation with you, Oliver. It was really amazing. Great questions, if I may say. Thank you very much for giving me, you know, the time and space to share some of these experiences which I made with my co-founders and my team.
Absolutely, my pleasure. And thank you all for listening and see you all next week.
Thank you.